Thank you very much, Melanie. Thank you for your kind support and hosting this session. And thank you, Sangha Life, for inviting me here. I consider it as a great honor to do these teachings here tonight, or this morning, whatever time zone you're in. And welcome everybody who's here, and you're welcome so much. Whatever you are with here tonight, whatever state your mind is in, your body is in, feel like absolutely welcomed. My name is Nirmala. I'm speaking from the north of Germany, where I live in an eco-village with 150 people and my three children and my husband. And Melanie, I do have a question. I do hear an echo, like the sound I hear is very far away. I don't know if this is normal. I think I can adjust to that, but I do my best. I hope the sound is okay for you. You cannot hear the echo. Okay. So the session runs with a 30 minutes guided meditation and then reflections on the topic of dancing with the devil, coming home in the midst of our emotional storms. I like to explore how our whole life can be a spiritual practice rather than separating our life from on the cushion and off the cushion. And followed by the reflections, there will be at the end half an hour time for questions and answers. And I like to invite you to make those 90 minutes a meditation, a 90 minutes meditation. Like first we do like a formal practice, but then you can kind of transit to a listening meditation, or during the question and answering time, maybe it's time for a practice of compassion while you are listening to the concerns or questions of other people. And I'm actually quite nervous about all this here. The technical thing will be okay. And it's my first time teaching here. I feel my heart beating very strong and a bit of trembling under the surface of my skin. And before we dive in the meditation, I like to invite you to move your body if it wants to be moved. Like if I wouldn't like being bound to those to the microphone here and I'm teaching, I would just stand up and really shake my body and invite my breath, like which really helps me with feeling of nervosity or restlessness. Maybe if you had like a difficult night, for some of you it's early morning, you want to shake your body. Maybe you just want to invite a little bit of stretching, moving around, yawning, or even making sounds, moving your jaw, like really asking the wisdom of your body where it wants to lead you right now, making sounds. Like we're often shy about that, but just see what wants to come up for you to help you during the next 90 minutes to be here. And maybe that you shake your body, maybe that you're just moving your fingers a little bit or adjusting a bit of your left shoulder, whatever it is for you right now. So take the time you need to get comfortable in your body. And then find a position which you're comfortable in. And that can be sitting, that can be laying down or standing. And rather than like listening to what your mind tells you how you should be in the meditation, what about asking your body and really listening to your body? Like, how does your body wants to be during the guided meditation? And how can it be so it still stays awake? So even if you lay down, invite your system to stay awake. And the invitation is to close your eyes and of course, you can also keep your eyes open, keep the gaze soft and warmly white, whatever's the right thing for you. And maybe your first out-breath can float down in your body, like down in your pelvis, down through your legs, through your feet, to the earth. Keeping the exhalation rather a bit longer to arriving here, to contact with the ground you're sitting on, you're laying on, you're standing on. Sending the breath through your pelvis, through the legs, through the feet, down to earth. Really taking your time to arrive in your body. Maybe even making small adjustments. And what about relaxing the space behind and around your eyes? So your eyes, if open or closed, can become soft. You can kind of drop the skin of your head down towards your shoulder blades, running over your lower back, through the pelvis, down to earth. Maybe you can relax the skin of your forehead, down your temples, down the cheeks, down to earth. Maybe you want to let your shoulders drop down a little bit more. Or release tension from your jaw, like relaxing your teeth, your tongue. Just feeling into your body, really arriving into your body. Feeling the ground below, the earth, supporting you. Maybe with your exhalation, you want to release down to earth even more. Feeling the space behind your heart, the space in your chest. Feeling the space in your belly, your pelvis. Feeling the air around your body. And feeling your breath, just how it is showing itself in this very moment on its journey through your body. Without having to be any particular way, just letting your body be here as it is, letting your breath travel through your body, just how it's doing. Feel the area of your heart beating. And just be aware of your body, how it is in this very moment. Feeling the sensations in your body and allowing yourself to rest into it. Maybe you can feel heat or cold or prickling, tension or softness, just being aware of it. And maybe you're aware of particular thoughts or emotions. Maybe there's tiredness or anxiety. Maybe boredom, restlessness, sadness, irritation. Whatever there is, and you just allow it to be there without going into it, without inviting it to become stronger, just letting it be as it is, without pushing it away, having to do anything with it, just resting into it. Just resting into it and not to think what it feels like. Be here with whatever is arising for you in this very moment. Maybe you can take your attention to a place in your body which feels like home, like a place of home, a place of maybe connectedness, a place which feels alive. Could be your belly, could be your chest or your heart, or the space behind your heart. Finding a place in your body which feels like home, which feels okay. Just okay. Maybe it's your little finger or your hand or a foot. And take your attention there to this place. A place which feels maybe somehow connected or just okay or home. And if you can't find any place in your body which feels okay, then you could address the space around your body. Or if your eyes are open, just keeping a softened gaze on somewhere in the room you're in, which gives you a sense of resting, of connectedness, of feeling home. And stay there with your attention. Really feeling into this place of connectedness. And if thoughts are running through, just let them do their thing. Let them do their thinking, and you come back to the place which feels like home, which feels okay, maybe just okay. When your emotions want to catch your attention, what about just noticing? They're there. Let them also do their thing and come back to the place of home, the place of connectedness. Place where it feels okay, wherever that is, in your body or outside your body. And keep practicing like that, being aware what's rising up for you. And resting back in the place of connectedness. And where are you at this very moment? Just noticing, coming back to the place of home, the place of connectedness. Really resting in this place. Let everything else just be as it is. Coming back home again and again. And for the last few minutes of our practice, can you rest even more in this place which feels like home, the place of connectedness? Just really rest there. Maybe Let it widen out a bit. Maybe it wants to spread around your whole body. Maybe it wants to spread even to the space around your body and further out, getting wide and open. And when we soon end this formal practice, can you go really gentle and smooth to the transition? Being aware of what you're touching inside and taking some of that with in the kind of listening meditation. Can you start moving your body really slowly again, just really listening? What kind of movement does your body want right now? What's really supporting you in this time of listening meditation? So, welcome all of you again. It's now 183 people here in this global sangha. And I like to invite you to kind of root down through your body to the earth. Like imagine that the roots are growing out through your legs, through your feet, through your sitting bones, your tailbone, your pubic bone. And can you imagine that all those roots are meeting under the earth, like all the roots from us 183 people here? like that you are not alone in this. And our roots are actually meeting all the other roots of other human beings on Earth. If we would be on Zoom, we would see like little squares here where we could see each other, like a little bit on the like on the Muppet Show. But we are not. So I really invite you to sense to the field of Sangha. All people here who want to be happy, actually. And sometimes wanting to be happy, we do really crazy, confusing, weird things to become happy. So the topic for the theme tonight is dancing with the devil, coming home in the midst of our emotional storms. And what I mean with it is kind of finding creative ways to address our inner devils, to address our difficulties, to address our difficult emotions. And one way to be creative in our practice is to cultivate generosity. It's actually one of the first, actually, of the 10 paramita, generosity. And it's always or often underestimated, I think, especially here in the West, that that can really be a heart-opening practice. We are not so used to it in the West, actually, to practice generosity. It's more common in the East. And I recently actually read from a native Indian tribe where young children are having a ceremony where they're presented with lots of food and drinks and clothes. And after the adult member of the tribe, they call out like, "I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm cold." And the children are invited to give. So what a practice, like to like bring that to young children. I think it's great. And the Buddha said, if you knew what I do about giving, you would not miss any opportunity while having a meal to not share, like always share when you're having a meal. Yeah, so I just want to open the possibility in your practice of generosity, which sometimes when we are really at the end of our forces and having really hard times, this could be a way we could practice. And it doesn't have to be always in a way with money. Like it could be with a smile to somebody, supporting your neighbor to bring the garbage out, like really make this sincerely your spiritual practice. And there are many ways, just having good wishes for somebody, listening to somebody can be an act of generosity. And one way to give is in terms of money, actually. And there's this green Dana button below the screen you can see here. And you can press it, and then you have different kind of opportunities to contribute actually to Sangha Life, like to this platform here, and also to myself, like the money you give tonight will be shared and supports me and my family. So to start with, I like to say some lines from a letter which Rilke wrote, a Czech poet who lived about 100 years ago. He wrote it actually 120 years ago to a soldier. It's a part, some lines out of a letter he wrote to a soldier. And actually this soldier, he was a young poet as well. So he was in conflict of being a soldier and being a poet at the same time. And I think we kind of all know this conflict inside, like the soldier energy and the energy of a poet. So the lines go like that. Once the realization is accepted that even between the closest beings, infinite distances exist. A marvelous living, side by side, can grow up for them if they succeed in loving the expanse between them, which gives them the possibility of always seeing each other as a whole before an immense sky. And actually, this talk is about a relationship, the relationship to yourself and the relationship to your inner storms. So I gave myself the permission to rewrite those lines from the letter. And I like to repeat it to you again, slightly different version, like my own version. Once the realization is accepted that even in the middle of our most difficult stuff, infinite distances exist, a marvelous living side by side with everything which arises can grow up for us. If we succeed in loving the expanse in between everything, which gives us the possibility of always seeing ourselves as a whole before an immense sky. I see in the chat the question if it's from Letters to a Young Poet. Yes, that's what it is, Letters to a Young Poet from Rilke. And the young poet actually was a soldier. How often do we see each other as whole, as really being complete, without wanting to be better, without wanting to be perfect, without wanting to get rid of something? Just how much time do we really spend of, like, with feeling just okay as we are, without blaming our thing, ourselves, just really loving ourselves just as we are, non-judging under an immense sky? So often the thoughts which run through our clouded minds seem to be like fixed truth. We believe we are not good enough. What if we kind of zoom out a bit and just invite other possibilities here? When the Buddha gave his first teaching in Sarnath a few weeks after his enlightenment. He was teaching the Four Noble Truths, and the first of them is there is dukkha in life, and dukkha is often related to as suffering or pain, but actually it can be really subtle, can be just a feeling of there's something not okay, something could be better. Just like a sticky feeling. Sometimes more like in the background. And the second of the Four Noble Truths is the causes for suffering, like greed, hatred, and delusion. It's a demanding for things to be different, constant demanding for things to be different. To see that suffering arises due to how we relate to it. And it's so helpful to understand actually the causes for suffering. It's so helpful that it's really in here. It's not somewhere out there. Like, how often do we blame other people or life for not getting what we want or having something what we don't want? Like, it's so helpful for us because we can kind of address to it in ourselves rather than asking somebody else to be different. And the third of the noble truth is there's an end to suffering. And maybe this is the truth which most people are attracted to come to the spiritual path, to hope they will find an end to suffering. And misunderstanding this truth can lead to confusion. Like, it can lead to a clinging of enjoyful and calm states of mind and ignoring life just how it is. We think when we start practicing, we can end suffering, but actually aging, sickness, dying, it will stay in this life, right? It won't go away. But we can learn to relate to our suffering, to our dukkha, in a more skillful way, in a wholesome way, maybe more full of compassion or kindness and care. If we strive for the end of suffering, this can really increase our suffering. And I know it's an issue for some meditators, actually, like to feel lots of pressure to become better in meditation, rather than honestly acknowledging what is happening in this moment and stay present with it, stay present with our experience. A key of spiritual practice is that we don't have to feel a certain way to be happy. We really understand this. This can create space, that can create freedom. We don't have to feel a certain way in order to be happy. What a message. Do we address to our emotional life in a way that is really suitable, skillful, and helpful for us, which is really kind and meaningful? And the fourth of the Noble Truths is the way to end suffering, the Noble Eightfold Path. And actually, it's not something abstract somewhere out there. We can like walk this path right now in this like day in our house, in our garden, like some part of the path is right understanding, for example. And we can bring it right into our life, actually. We can ask ourselves again and again, what do I need to understand here? What is there to learn from this experience? Like even in the middle of our pain, like what can I learn from this? Another part, step of the path is right intention. And actually, it's often referred to as right, but I think the word appropriate is actually more appropriate because it's a middle way, right? We don't want to put another perfectionism on it. Like we have so much of that already to try to become somebody perfect and having this constant demand on us to be better. And appropriate intention, like what about making this really a practice? Again and again in your life, during your day, what is my intention here? What is really meaningful for me in life? What do I want to take care of? How can I take care of this situation? All right, speech, like how do I want to communicate? And like staying again and again awake. Like what, where, like how do I want to communicate? What's my intention in this communication? What's really meaningful for me? Can we take this really serious of path and make it our practice, like really practicing walking the path in our life rather than that it has to happen all on the cushion. Somehow Buddhism gets sometimes reduced to as if it's only about mindfulness practice on the cushion. But actually we do need to bring the practice in our life. Otherwise it stays on the cushion and nothing will change in our life, right? And I assume when we ask her, like look at our intention, we want, like there's a wholesome wish for creating maybe softness around the heart, compassion. And rather than staying like bound to our destructive emotions and habits. And if we do, okay, we can say, yes, that's what's happening right now. And then ask the question again, like, what do I need to understand here? How do I want to attend to that? And what we attend to will expand. Where we put our attention on will get widener. We have the habit of kind of getting narrow and tensed and focused on the things which are not okay, like dwelling around our pain and our difficulties. And there is a possibility here to open up a bit, like to maybe see the space around you, changing the view, looking for what is good. Everything included, like, let's stop separating good and bad. What else is there? What else is there if we put like good and bad here into our hands softly? What else is there? We consider some parts of our life as spiritual and others as not spiritual. What about bringing like holiness into all kinds of our life? You can reflect for yourself, which paths do you not think are holy in life, which are not holy in your life? Like, what is there? And can you make it meaningful as well, even that part of your life? In the community where I'm living, there is a tree. And on the tree, there are quotes and poems hanging. And actually, there's this one quote I saw. It says, life is the thing with the joy and the colors and not the thing with the anger and the gray. And it's not true. Life is everything, everything, all inclusive. What if we say like, yes to all of that? And society tells us continuously to be different. Like if we see pictures on advertisement or magazines, like you have these people with glossy skin and glowing skin and no wrinkles and no dark eyeshadows and always a smile. They look like as if they're just happy and healthy. And they like tell us that's what we have to be, right? And we kind of strive for that in a way or other. It's not like we are allowed to be unhappy. We are allowed to be angry and bring our attention there. What does it feel like to be angry? What does it feel like in your body to be angry? What kind of thoughts are rising up with that? What does it feel to be sad? Just really staying tuned into it. And I know sometimes it's so difficult. It can be so difficult when we are really caught by anger, by depressions, by frustrations, by fear, by desperation. It can be so difficult to stay with what is and to really let those emotions rush through our body. And I think the practice we just did, this practice of coming home in the body, can really support us, like Helen says in the chat, forgiveness. Yes, forgetting ourselves, embracing it all, being like kind and gentle. And we do have to do it all alone, right? We think we have to do it alone, and it's like this feeling separated. It's kind of contributing so much to our pain. I like the story of the Buddha, of his awakening, when he sat down under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, and decided not to get up from this place until he would really realize the truth, really realize the way to freedom. And in that night, when he sat there with this decision not to get up before he would realize freedom, full freedom, Mara came to visit him. Mara is kind of the devil of the Buddhist, or the god of the demons. And she came and she distracted Buddha. She tried everything to get him off the earth or off his cushion. I don't think he had a cushion then. She sent arrows and fire and demons and naked women just to distract him. And so what I understand is that he was experiencing quite some, maybe doubt, if this is the right thing to sit here, or shall I maybe better get up and go to this woman over there? And it was really, I think it was really intense. That's how I understand it, at least. And what Buddha did, and you see it on lots of Buddha statues, he put his hand down and he touched the earth. He asked the earth for support. He didn't do it all alone. He asked the earth to support, and the earth came and helped him witnessing what's going on. And Mara went away. That's what the story goes like, the earth can just be such a support for us. Like when we are really at the end with sitting on the cushion because it's too much, and we have phases in our life where it can be too much to sit on the cushion, like the earth can be a big support. Like sometimes when like I experience a feeling of desperation, I go down before I go out in the forest and I lay down with my belly on the earth, really arms wide, legs wide, just surrendering, grieving, crying, saying yes, yes, that's how it is at this very moment. And feeling the support of the earth, it's there, it has an immense amount of love for us. It's just accepting us, the earth, just as we are, all-inclusive, with all-inclusive, all our pain, and jealousy, envy, depressions, all that. We are not alone. We have the air here to support it, to support that. Really feel it, the air which is supporting us. We're breathing in, we're breathing out, feeling our heart supporting us. There are phases in our life where it's hard to find like some time for formal practice. When we have children or we are caring for somebody, maybe a dying person or a sick person, like it will be very hard to find space for formal meditation practice. And that's a phase in our lives where we don't need to. We can, like if you have children or caring for somebody, we can make compassion our practice, right? And take this serious. Make compassion your practice. Feel what it changes in your heart. What does change in the area around your heart? If we are experience trauma in the past, it can be very hard for us to sit with our stuff. Emotions are difficult. Nobody is really good at them. How do we relate to our painful, to our stressful moments, or to ourselves when we make mistakes? We can't get rid of destructive emotions by being angry with them or by telling them to go away. It's like hitting a stone with a stone. Rather than, if we imagine our emotions as being a stone in us, rather than meeting them with a feather, what would that be? Can we let the difficulties of our life become the heart of our practice? Addressing our pain, our dukkha, in a kind, calm, gentle, tender way, really seeing it. Yes, you are there. You are there. I feel you. I see you. There's a quote from the Sufi poet Rumi, and it goes like, where the wound is, that's the place where the light shines in. Wow. What if we would address our wounds in that way, our pain in that way, like really respect it? It's a place where the light can shine in. There's another quote by Thomas Merton, which goes like, true prayer and love are learned in the moment when prayer has become impossible and our heart has turned into stone. Wow, true prayer and love are learned in the moment when prayer has become impossible and our heart has turned into stone. Can we slow down? Can we slow down? Every experience we feel wants to be met with kindness, with care, with gentleness. Rather than wanting to fix our wounds, wanting to fix our pain. Can we see them for what they really are? And one tool I find so helpful, I learned during my body focused therapy training, is the tool of ABS. And actually, like, A stands for Atem, which is the German word for breath, and B for body movement, and S for sound or speech. And like, when things become really intense, what about inviting our breath? Maybe just shifting it a little bit and see what does it do to our experience if we maybe drop more awareness on the exhalation, or maybe breathe heavily. What if we start to move our body, sometimes maybe shaking our body, sometimes just moving really, really gentle. What if we give sound, like make a sound? It's really calming our nervous system down. We forget about tools, right? This is a really helpful one. You can do it in the middle of the night when you can't fall asleep, or when you're suffering from anxiety and fear or depressions. What to let the stuff run through your body and move while you feel it. Being aware of it. This is how it feels. Yes. Opening up again and again. Yes. I actually put a guided meditation for difficult times on the blog, which is posted on the Sangha Life website. And I really can recommend doing this meditation. It's like a movement, breath, sound meditation, the ABS, which means like the anti-lock blockage braking system, right? In English, I think that's the word, from the car, the brake, like rather running on automatic pilot. What, taking a break, seeing things as they are, attending to them in a really kind way, and maybe inviting a nourishing beat just to touch your arms or to touch your face. Like, can you feel that it makes a difference, that we shape our world from moment to moment? Like being really gentle, just maybe putting your hand on your heart. Feeling of coming home. Where does it feel okay? Can we find an area in our body, or maybe just around our body, where it just feels okay? There are hundreds of ways to kneel down and kiss the earth, Rumi tells us. There are hundreds of ways to kneel down and kiss the earth. We can find all those ways in our life, in the middle of our life. Maybe sometimes our practice is chopping wood. Maybe sometimes our practice is to go in the forest and just yell a bit. Or just sitting down and mindfully drinking a cup of tea. And when things get really intense, what about doing things even more slow? What about like feeling my hand on the handle of the door? Like really attuning step by step to what's happening right here, right now, knowing this will also pass. This will also pass. Or inviting a smile. What, inviting a smile even if you feel angry? Just to try it, and or like lifting your eyebrows up. It actually has a really similar effect. Like what is changing if you bring your mouth here, the corners of your mouth up a little bit? Give yourself a nourishing contact. Or change our view to something which we like, maybe to the trees outside. Listening to sounds. So, can we trust that our heart can be with whatever comes our way? To end with, I would like you to listen to this poem from, to the prayer actually, from Teresa from Avila. Praying also can be sometimes so helpful. And also, like, I see the time is running by. It's going so fast, actually. But on the blog I posted on the Sangha Life website, I put a link to the Medicine Buddha prayer, Medicine Buddha meditation, which is a visualization and praying practice, which you might want to try at some time. So the prayer from Teresa from Avila, actually she lived in the 16th century, goes like that. Let me not be afraid to linger here in your presence with all my humanity exposed. For you are God. You are not surprised by my frailties, my continuous failures. May we all be at peace with our mind, with our body, with our heart. May we all be at peace with our emotions, just as they are. Right now, may we never underestimate the capacity of our body, mind, heart, to embrace the stream of life just how it is. And may our practice be beneficial for ourselves and for all other human beings. May we see each other as a whole before an immense sky. So let's sit some time in silence before question time is question and answering time. What is alive in you in this very moment? What resonates with you? How is your body feeling? Can you attend to the space around your body? So, the time for transition. Again, we have many transitional moments in our life, and we can go slowly when we transition. So it's time for questions, and I would be so happy to receive questions from you. And it can be anything, really. It can be something from your life, like any issues you have in your life, any difficulties, whatever. It can be questions about the practice or something which came up while I was sharing the reflections on it. Thank you for all those nice supporting comments in the chat. It's really sweet. Another thing which like is so helpful when we are in the middle of our storms is the mantra of this will also pass. This will also pass. And while I'm curiously waiting for your questions. I like to read a very short story to you. Actually, it's from this book, Zen Shorts. It's a beautiful book to read to kids. And the story is called The Farmer's Luck. There was once an old farmer who had worked his crops for many years. One day, his horse ran away. Upon hearing the news, his neighbors came to visit. "Such bad luck," they said sympathetically. "Maybe," the farmer replied. The next morning, the horse returned, bringing with it two other wild horses. "Such good luck," the neighbors exclaimed. "Maybe," the farmer said. The following day, his son tried to ride one of the untamed horses, was thrown off and broke his leg. Again, the neighbors came to offer their sympathy on his misfortune. "Such bad luck," they said. "Maybe," answered the farmer. The day after that, the military officials came to the village to draft young men into the army to fight in a war. Seeing that the son's leg was broken, they passed him by. "Such good luck," cried the neighbors. "Maybe," said the farmer. We don't know. We don't know where it's all good for. We have our own pace. Our path will develop in its own time and its own way. So I see there are questions, and I press this button to see questions. So the first question is from Anna. "I have been struggling with very deep grief over the loss of my son last year." Yes. Yeah. "Thank you so much for this helpful way of seeing my thoughts and feelings with this difficult thing." Yes. Thank you, Anna, for sharing. Thank you. So wonderful to be on this path together. Yes. And allow the grief to be there, which I read you do. Like, yes, grieving needs time, and it doesn't have to stop. Like, what if we allow it? It doesn't have to stop. Like, it, grieving kind of can come back, and then it passes. And just being really kind with yourself, giving yourself nourishing contact. Yes. Thank you, Anna, for sharing. And thank you for your gratitude. Actually, gratitude can also be part of our practice with difficult emotions. Like, just seeing, what are you grateful for? And sometimes it's tiny, right? And just look at these things. Look at the joy in your life, like, making this part of your practice. So then there's another question. "How can I be with the constant sadness of my son being in Australia and not coming home? I really struggle to be with those emotions." Yes, this is from Jane. Yeah. Allow it to be there. Allow your pain to be there. Allow your grief to be there. Like, again, like, be kind to yourself and gentle. And also, I think it helps to really see it's not in our hand. This life is not, it's unfolding its own pace. It's unfolding its own way. And we don't know what things are good for. And also seeing it's like it's his life. It's his life, and allow his life to unfold in a way it's unfolding. And don't consider as this being like something wrong or maybe feeling guilty for it, and just also really being with the question, like saying, I don't know how to do that. This is hard. And see, recognize also when the sadness is not there, right? It's a coming and going of sensations, a coming and going of mind movements. And see when it's not there and acknowledge it. And really stay with what else is there? What else is there? What other possibilities do I have here to address? And take the sadness with you, like while you're walking, while you take mindful steps on the path, on the street, actually, in your house, in your garden, feeling the earth under your feet, being really mindful while you're doing your dishes, while you're preparing a meal, and being, letting the sadness, like allow the sadness to be there with the sensations in your body. And the mind can make things really like strong. And be attentive to that. Like, what is the story of the mind here? What is the story telling me? And does it increase my sadness? And what is maybe a more skillful way to relate to that? Like, where else can I put my attention on? What I said at the beginning, where we put our attention on, that will expand. What is there in your life you can appreciate? And being patient with yourself, appreciating that you're doing your best. We're all doing our best. And I know a woman comes up to my mind, and she didn't get in contact with her daughter for I think about 10 years, and the daughter didn't want to have contact. And actually what she did, she was baking a birthday cake every birthday for her daughter and lighting a candle, and through that I'm really staying connected, like, only because your son is not coming home, it doesn't mean your love has to decrease. Like, it can, it can grow your love. It's not out there in the object, right? It's not that your son didn't take your love with him. Your love is with you, and really feeling the love in your body. Feeling your care. What else is there? It's the sadness, the grief. And what else is there? Caring, love, compassion. And if we hold it gently in our hands, what about kind of dropping back, resting in the space behind our body, maybe, and just seeing it all? What else is there? Loving the expanse between everything. There's immense space everywhere, even in your sadness. Thank you, Jane, so much for your question. I wish you the best. So, I have a question about how the Buddhist concept of karma explains being abused. I don't know, Teresa. Thank you for this question, but I don't know about the Buddhist concept of karma explaining being abused. I think like having made the experience of abuse myself, it's not helpful to search for reasons and to look back actually, but to acknowledge the like the pain it brings with it, the confusion it brings, addressing to it in a wholesome, kind and gentle way. Because I know we can feel guilty about it, right? And I have the feeling, the impression we did something wrong. It's somehow our fault. And we don't even know from like karma, from which life, like how many lives ago, or if like what contributed to the situation. We don't know. It's beyond our understanding. And just to acknowledge, okay, this is how life is unfolding for me. Yes, and it's difficult. Yes, karma can be intense for some people. It is for me, definitely. When we attend to meditation in the Buddhist path, it doesn't mean that our pain goes away, like that our foolishness goes away. It's just that we become aware of how foolish we are and how much pain there is. Actually, when we attend to a spiritual path, what happens is that our heart gets more soft and wide and open, and all this difficulty, stuff, and trauma as well, sees the chance to rise up. Finally, there's space for me. Finally, I can be seen. So it can be really difficult to be on the path and to acknowledge it all. And wow, that's also there, yes. So I'm sorry, Teresa, I can't say more about that. So, Lean, could you say something about how to respond or act when other people are unkind or harsh? I want to remain kind to others as much as I can, but also remain kind and truthful to myself. Yes. It is sometimes difficult to know how to deal with this, to find the most helpful response that is respectful to myself and others. Yeah. So acknowledging it's difficult. It's difficult. And I think, however you are with that, just acknowledge it and see it. Like maybe when somebody is harsh or unkind to you, you feel like the sensations in your body, like tension or like anxiety, whatever, like however it feels in your body, or some heat raising up. And one way to practice with it is just to seeing it, to relaxing down to the earth, to feeling the space around you. And then, yes, and sometimes we do need to address things, right? Like, especially if people are doing harm to us again and again, we need to say no, like we say to our kids, like in a very compassionate and friendly way. And the challenge here is like not to get involved in a drama, like that's what our head does, like the mind does, and get very tense itself if that happens. So, wow, yes, okay, this is also happening. Yeah, a firm and gentle and kind, no, this is too far for me. And a helpful way is nonviolent communication. And I feel that the spiritual practice, like mindfulness practice, is like a key for to be able to practice nonviolent communication. Like you can learn this, like look it up on the internet from Marshall Rosenberg, how to really see that, like communicate your, how you are, communicate your needs, listening to somebody else's needs, and also expressing a wish, like what do you need from the other person? And it takes sometimes courage. I know we tend to hide and run away from conflicts. We do need to be kind to ourselves. And I think we do need to be kind of ourselves first. And with people where it's really difficult, actually, Martin, he advised me once, put them like minimum contact to this person, like have the minimum of contact with this person and put the maximum sincerity in it. Like, don't see this, try to not to meet this person every day if you can, like with our family, we can't. And then if you meet this person, like what practicing compassion, what seeing the good things in this person, what about practicing equanimity? Okay, this is also there. Yeah, thank you, Lean, for that question. I hope it was somehow helpful. So, Larry from USA. Oh, well, these questions jump. Thanks for a most impassioned, inspiring, heartfelt talk. Can you talk about your path and what about certain wisdom teachings like Vedana, defilements? Do you use these BTW, I don't know what that means. Love your suggestions to make sounds, go lay down on the earth. Deeper, much better, from Larry in the Western Massachusetts, USA. Yes, like I started my path with a really intense, sincere practice. Like I spent several years in India and Sri Lanka, and I lived almost a year in silence in Nilambe Meditation Center in Sri Lanka. And so that was quite really kind of strict formal practice a lot of the times. And I felt that I was putting a lot of pressure on myself. Like when I practice with like in the Sayadaw-Mahasi method where you sit and walk in exchange, like in turns for 16 hours a day, the teacher asked me every day, like, how did you progress? Like, what progress did you make? And I actually collapsed, like, ended up collapsing on the bathroom, crying, and put like so much pressure on it. I'm not good enough. Like, I should be quicker in following the steps. I came to practice a lot of laying down meditation and resting meditation, and actually, like, while I was actually in India, I got pregnant there, and then my idea of having to follow the path and seeing the light and the benefits of the path, which I definitely did, like it's changed so much for me. Like it looked to me as being a mother would like kind of interrupt it, and it wouldn't be possible for me to practice. And I think I missed out a lot of practice which I could have done, like the practice of compassion, the practice of surrendering to what is. Like I had a lot of confusion and not quite like being open to the stream of life. But actually my oldest daughter is now like almost 17. She really pulled me on the earth. It's not only about waking up, it's also about growing up. It has to go together. Waking up and growing up has to go together. And for growing up, living a life as a householder is really helpful. Embracing our inner storms, making our difficulties the heart of our practice. And then, yes, I like spent in March, I spent 3 weeks at the Moulin, and I did formal practice, yeah, like Vedana practice, mindfulness, like mindfulness of body, of the mind, the feelings, emotions, of the stream of life, the mystery of life, how it's unfolding. Yeah, thank you for your question. So I think it's the last question. I got them all. Cool. If I do my daily life, this is from Lara. If I do my daily life as a meditation, how do I find the right way of just witnessing and on the other hand, taking action or changing thing or my way of acting?
And on the other hand, taking action or changing thing or my way of acting. What about trying intentions, Lara? Like, ask yourself again and again, what is my intention here? What do I want to develop in life? Like, where do I want to really put my effort in? Like, right effort is one path of the one step of the Eightfold Noble Path, appropriate amount of effort. And then see, you can, like, the change will happen. It will happen by itself. And you can witness it again and again. And you don't have to, you don't have to witness like 24 hours a day. You take rest, like take a break. Like we don't have to be so strict on us. Like we can allow our mind to doze off, which it does anyway. And then again, we see, okay, and now I'm witnessing what I'm doing. And also like practicing this, like being alert with it and awake. And aware, we come to the point where we see, oh, I do have a choice here. I can go one way or I can go the other way. And what do I really want to take care of? Like, the more we witness, I think, the more we are able to take breaks, to pause, to go slowly. And from there, change will happen. So, Lara, I hope that was helpful for you. Thank you so much for your question. Thank you for all your questions. Thank you for being here, for your lovely comments, and for supporting this platform just by being here, actually, just by creating this Sangha. Thank you so much for this opportunity to gift, for this opportunity to share. May our practice be beneficial for ourselves and for all other human beings. May we develop the courage of a lion, or maybe the courage of a kitten, to just be with whatever is rising up for us, however life is unfolding and showing itself. Thank you so much. Okay. Have a beautiful rest of the day or a beautiful rest of the evening, wherever you are. Bye bye.